The little red light wasn't bright. It wasn't dramatic. It didn't scream. It just blinked, soft, steady, like a pulse that didn't belong to me. I had her phone in my hand because she'd asked me to plug it in. Casual, sweet. The kind of favor people ask when they feel comfortable enough to be careless. The screen lit up as I turned it, and for a second I saw my own face reflected in the glass. Tired eyes, mouth half open, a man still trying to be good in the aftermath of bad choices. Then the audio app moved, like it was alive. A waveform, my voice climbing and falling, my laugh from earlier, that stupid relieved laugh, and underneath it, her breathing, patient, quiet, like she was listening to rain. My chest tightened so fast, it felt like my ribs had been cinched with wire. I remember thinking, this can't be mine. Like sound is property, like truth has a lock. But it was mine, all of it. My confession, my guilt, the names, the dates, the part I couldn't say out loud to anyone else because it would turn my life into ash. I had handed it to her in pieces, night after night, and she had gathered it like someone gathering hair from a brush. The worst part wasn't the betrayal. The worst part was the way my brain reached for gratitude anyway. Like a trained animal, still looking for the hand that fed it. I didn't meet her in a moment of strength. I met her in the thin space between panic attacks, in the hours where sleep feels like a rumor. It was a bar that pretended it wasn't a bar. Dim lighting, small plates, jazz low enough to pass as background noise. I had gone alone because being alone felt safer than being known. I sat at the end of the counter with my shoulders hunched forward, like I could hide inside myself. She didn't slide into the seat next to mine like a movie. She took a table two seats away and waited, not flirtation, not hunting, just presence. The kind that makes silence feel less like punishment. When my hands started shaking as I lifted my glass, she didn't stare. She didn't ask if I was okay. She just said soft, almost bored, "That's a rough day." I don't know why that cracked me. It wasn't pity. It wasn't concern. It was permission. I said something stupid. An apology that didn't make sense. People apologize when they're scared of being inconvenient. She nodded like it was normal, like she'd seen worse, like my mess wasn't a spectacle. That was her gift at first. She made shame feel ordinary. We didn't swap life stories. We swapped small details, names, work, a few safe jokes. She had a laugh that stayed quiet, as if she didn't want to waste it on the wrong moment. When I said I was tired, she didn't offer advice. She just said, "Yeah, I can see that." No one says that anymore. People either fix or flee. Seeing is rarer. Her name was Alina. She said it like it didn't matter. I repeated it anyway, because I wanted it to stick. The next time I went, she was there again. Same table, same calm. It wasn't coincidence. It wasn't planned either. At least that's what I told myself. I wanted it to be fate, because fate is cleaner than intention. We started texting. At first it was light. Memes. Quick check-ins, stupid observations about the weather. Then it shifted the way a tide shifts. No single wave announces it, but suddenly the water is at a different height. She asked questions that felt like care. How's the sleep? Did the nightmares show up? Are the thoughts loud today? I should have been suspicious. People don't talk like that unless they're trained or invested. But suspicion takes energy, and I was already running on fumes. One night, after 3 days of my stomach feeling like it was full of stones, I told her something small, a harmless secret. The kind of thing I'd normally keep buried out of habit. She didn't flinch. She didn't change her tone. She sent back, "Okay, that's heavy. I'm still here." Still here. That phrase hit like a sedative. I replied too fast. I replied like I'd been waiting for it. I started pouring things into that text thread that I hadn't spoken in years. Not because she asked directly, but because she made the space feel safe enough to fill. She didn't rush me. She didn't interrogate. She let my sentences trail off and didn't punish the silence. She would wait. Then she would send something simple. "Keep going if it helps." I didn't realize how starved I was for that. Someone who didn't turn away from the ugly parts. When I started admitting the edges of what I'd done, what I'd almost done, she didn't recoil. She didn't call me a monster. She didn't label me anything at all. She made my guilt feel workable, like it could be carried. The relief was intoxicating. I mistook it for healing. And I started to look forward to the nights, not because I enjoyed them, but because she had become the only place my mind didn't feel like a courtroom. I remember the first time I typed, "I don't think I'm a good person." My thumb hovered over the screen like the sentence could bite. She replied in less than a minute, "I don't think you're evil. I think you're scared." I stared at that message until my eyes burned. Scared. It was softer than guilty. It was survivable. And when I thanked her, when I actually wrote thank you, like a man begging for forgiveness, she sent, "You don't have to earn being heard." That's the sentence that did it. That's when I stopped protecting myself. After that, the questions changed. Not at once, not obviously. They sharpened like a blade being honed in a different room. She stopped asking how I felt and started asking when. When was the first time it happened? What month? Was it before or after you changed jobs? I told myself she was helping me make sense of my own timeline. Trauma gets blurry. Guilt gets messy. Sometimes the mind needs structure. That was what I told myself. But there were moments, tiny, almost invisible moments, where something in her tone felt arranged. If I skipped over a detail, she didn't react emotionally. She didn't say, "That's okay." She said, "Go back." That part matters. Matters for what? Sometimes she would ask the same question twice, phrased differently, like she was testing the consistency of my answer. I noticed it once and felt heat rise up my neck. I joked to cover it. "Damn, Alina, it's like I'm on a witness stand." She sent back a laughing emoji. Then, "I'm just trying to understand you." Understand. I hated myself for how badly I wanted to be understood. The intimacy grew strange. Not sexual. Nothing like that. It was worse in a way. It was the kind of closeness that makes a person feel chosen. She would message late at night after long stretches of silence, and it would feel like she'd been thinking about me the whole time. "I can't sleep. Tell me what's going on in your head. I keep wondering what you're carrying." Those words weren't romantic. They were surgical. They cut right to the part of me that had learned to perform strength. I started waiting for her messages like they were medication. I began to feel uneasy when she didn't respond. I checked my phone too often. I reread old texts, searching for signs I'd missed, like a man picking at a scab. Then came the first time she asked for names. Not directly, never directly. She said, "It sounds like there were people involved." I said, "Not really." She said, "There are always people, even if they're in the background." Background, like a scene. I felt the pit in my stomach open. I typed, "I can't." She waited. Minutes passed. Then, "Okay, I'm not gonna push. I'm still here." Still here again. The phrase that calmed me was also the rope around my wrists. So I gave her a name. Just one. A first name. A detail without context. I justified it by telling myself it wasn't enough to matter. It was a gesture of trust. Nothing more. She responded, "Thank you. That helps." Helps. What did it help? A few nights later, she asked for the spelling. I felt cold. I should have stopped then. I should have shut it down, blocked the number, swallowed the shame alone like I always had. But something else had already formed between my ribs. Dependence. The idea that losing her would mean losing the only person who didn't treat my confession like a weapon. I started noticing other things. Her compliments were strategic. They arrived right after I revealed something heavy, like a reward. "I'm proud of you for being honest." That took courage. I knew there was more to you than the mistakes. Every time she said something like that, I felt my posture straighten in my chair. I felt like maybe I could still be a man worth saving. Then, when she asked for the next detail, I gave it, because I didn't want to fall back into being disposable. One night, half asleep, I heard a faint click during our call. I paused. "What was that?" She laughed too quick. "Probably my heater. It's ancient." I accepted it because I wanted to. Because suspicion would have meant admitting that the comfort was conditional. Another time, I caught her repeating one of my phrases back to me, word for word. Not in a mocking way. More like quoting. I said, "It feels like my life is on a timer." Later, she messaged, "A life on a timer is still a life." It should have been sweet. It felt like someone had copied my handwriting. I started waking up with a film of dread on my skin. The conversations were still tender, still slow, but I began to feel like I was being guided somewhere, like the path was already mapped, and I was too tired to notice the signposts. The night it broke, I had been drinking. Not heavily, just enough for my defenses to soften at the edges. She asked one of those precise questions, the kind that made my throat go dry. "Did anyone else know you were there that night?" My stomach dropped. I heard myself say, "Yeah." The word left my mouth like a confession escaping custody. She didn't respond immediately, Silence, then a breath, controlled, quiet. Okay, she said, tell me who. And I did, because she had trained me to believe that truth, in her hands, turned into mercy. It happened on an ordinary night, which is the cruelest kind. She was at my place. Not because we were dating. There was no label, no romance, nothing that clean. She said she wanted to be near without making it complicated. She sat on my couch like she belonged there, legs tucked under her, mug in her hands, calm, warm, domestic. It made my skin relax. She asked for my charger, and I handed her the phone without thinking. I walked into the kitchen. I rinsed a glass. I looked out the window at the streetlights and felt, for the first time in weeks, almost normal. Then I heard the tiny buzz of her screen lighting up. When I came back, she had set the phone down on the coffee table, face up, like she wanted it seen, like she was done hiding. The screen was still on. Audio recording, timer running, waveform moving, my voice, my laugh, my confessions, stacked like bodies. For a second, I just stood there, brain refusing to translate what my eyes were saying. My hands went numb from the fingertips inward, like frost spreading through bone. I picked the phone up, like it might burn. I heard myself on the playback, clearer than I remembered, saying things I'd begged myself to forget. Names, dates, places. That last detail I'd given because I'd wanted to feel brave. My knees weakened. I sat hard on the edge of the couch, phone in my palm, staring at her as if she might transform into someone else if I looked long enough. She didn't look guilty. She looked relieved. Don't, I said. My voice came out small, pathetic. Don't do this. She set her mug down carefully. No shaking, no panic. I had to, she said. My heart stuttered. I tried to speak, but my throat was full of air that wouldn't turn into words. The room felt suddenly too bright, too exposed, like all the walls were made of glass. What is that? I managed. What the hell is that? She blinked slowly. It's proof. Proof. The word landed like a slap. I laughed, a short, ugly sound. Proof of what? Me falling apart? She didn't rise to the emotion. That was the sick part. She stayed calm, like calm was a weapon. I'm not doing this to hurt you, she said. A hot, helpless anger rushed up my chest. Then what? This is what, Alina, some kind of sick project? She tilted her head as if considering the best way to phrase it. I tried to give you a chance to tell the truth on your own. On your own, like I hadn't, like my confession hadn't been an act of trust, an act of surrender. I stared at her and felt something inside me split, not pain, not exactly, something colder, recognition. All those nights, all those pauses, all those precise questions, the way she rewarded me for being honest. It wasn't love. It wasn't even kindness. It was extraction, and I had been grateful for the needle. I stood up too fast, and the room spun. My vision tunneled. I wanted to smash the phone against the wall. I wanted to erase my own voice. Instead, I held it like an idiot, like it still belonged to me. Who are you? I whispered. She exhaled, someone who couldn't ignore what was happening. I heard a new sound then, my own breathing turning rough, sharp, a trapped animal. I backed away from her, my shoulders hitting the wall. I told you, I said, barely audible. I told you because I thought being heard meant being safe. Because I thought confession was a bridge, not a trapdoor. Her eyes softened, just a little, almost convincing. I didn't want it to end like this, she said. That sentence made me sick, the performance of regret, the final touch. What did you want, I asked, voice cracking. For me to thank you again? Silent. She didn't answer, which was its own answer. My phone buzzed, mine, not hers. A notification, a number I didn't recognize. Then another, and another. She had already sent it. Pieces, at least. Enough to start the avalanche. My stomach clenched so hard I thought I might throw up. I looked at her and saw the true ending in her posture. The quiet certainty of someone who had already decided what I deserved. She stood, smooth and unhurried, and picked up her coat. I'm sorry, she said, and it sounded rehearsed, like a line delivered to close a scene. I couldn't move. I couldn't chase. I couldn't beg. Begging would have been admitting that my dignity was hers to grant. So I did what I'd been trained to do. I stayed still. I listened to the door click shut like a verdict. Later, alone in the dark, I sat on the floor with my back against the couch and replayed the messages in my head, not hers, mine. All the times I thanked her. All the times I said I felt lighter. All the times I offered more. It wasn't just that she recorded me. It was that she let me believe I was healing while she built the case. And even now, with my life cracking open, part of me still missed the feeling of being listened to. That's what keeps me awake. Not the consequences, not the exposure, not the fear. It's the realization that I mistook a trap for tenderness. And I walked into it willingly.